And good evening, and welcome to the January 24th, 2012 Morro Bay City Council meeting. Welcome to everybody in the audience, and welcome to those of you watching at home. Let the record reflect that all members of the City Council are present, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. And if you would please stand and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Mr. Red Davis.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Announcements, reports, Noah.
Yeah, thank you. I just had one announcement regarding a phone call that I received speaking to the recent tree removals on Bernardo in relation to our pavement management plan and the work being done on Bernardo Street. And the request was to do some tree replacements for those trees that were removed. The caller didn't leave their name or phone number, which is why I'm making the announcement. And I did have a chance to talk to Mr. Woods today about that, and part of the contract for that work is also includes the tree replacement. So I wanted to let the caller know, if they're listening, that we will be doing the tree replacements there and in other places as it's necessary, and that there will be some opportunity for adoptions of those trees in the neighborhood to help make sure that those trees thrive and grow into nice replacements of the trees that were removed. And I also did want to mention, for anyone that is concerned or interested in trees in the community, we have our next volunteer tree committee meeting coming up tomorrow evening, Wednesday. That's Wednesday the 25th at the community center from 5 to 6:30. And, of course, our volunteer tree committee is made up of different members of the community that have experience in trees and horticulture, but also tree lovers. So if you're interested, come on out tomorrow evening, 5 to 6:30.
Thanks, Tom. George?
I need to correct a mistake I made last time. I think I gave you the wrong date for the Grange Spaghetti Dinner. It is February 24th. And if you like spaghetti, save March 23rd for the Community Foundation Spaghetti Dinner. And that's it.
Thank you, Carla.
Good evening. Thank you. I want to start by acknowledging the reciprocants from last week's Chamber of Commerce dinner, the Citizen of the Year.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. I'd be happy to. Approximately a week and a half ago, we went down to Ventura and met with the kennel. We had a choice of five dogs to choose from, so we looked at all five dogs, had them all come out and play with the handler a little bit, and that helped us with our decision, as well as listening to the breeders on which would be a good fit for our handler in our community. So we picked our dog. Its name is Cello, is how it's pronounced. It's spelled X-E-L-L-O. And our canine handler, Stephanie Pippen, is down training right now. She's just started her second week of a five-week training course. So we're very excited. And towards the end of February, Cello and Officer Pippen should be out on the street.
Great. And so I don't have to call you and think of it. Next meeting, I'll ask if you bring a photo and we'll put it up.
You bet. I'd love to.
And Chief Pond, you want to tell us how the fire station's coming along?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I think if you've driven by lately, you've noticed that the slab has been poured. It's all smooth and ready for walls to go up. The front block wall was put in place, and soon you'll be seeing bearing walls on the exterior and interior walls going up. Today there was a lift out there putting up 30-foot tall forms for the concrete stairwell and combination training tower. So it's an exciting time. We're going to see some actual progress now that the slab is done.
Yeah, I think next few weeks, boom, the building's going to be the shell. We'll be there.
It'll go pretty quick, I think, the shell part.
Great. Anything from anybody else? Okay, we're at the, closed session report. Rob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, Councilman in closed session to discuss real property transactions. The two properties discussed were 1185 Embarcadero and 3300 Panorama Drive. As to both of these real properties, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you, Rob. Okay, we're at the public comment period. I'm going to invite, Red, I'm going to invite Elena up first and you second, if that's okay with
sure.
you. Elena, come on up. Public comment is 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record. And good evening. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Elena Ramos-Pefley, and I am a local Morro Bay resident and professional photographer, and I came tonight to tell you about a new business that we're bringing to the area. It's called Toes in the Sand Weddings, and Morro Bay is going to be home of the very first Central Coast Destination Beach Wedding company that's going to be trying to bring tourists and local area members alike to this area and give them a place to have an affordable beach wedding. Toes in the Sand Weddings takes care of the location, the officiates, professional photographers. We have different decoration theme packages for people to choose from, and my professional photography skills is going to be included in these packages. So we put together this company, my husband and I, to offer people an affordable way to come to the area and get married and use the Central Coast beautiful coastlines and these pristine areas that draw everyone to this community that we love so much. So we just thought there was a big, huge demand to give people an option other than a hotel or an expensive venue that, as a professional photographer, I see is pretty much the only option for people. And so Toes in the Sand Weddings is going to give people denominational commitment ceremonies, and even if you just want to renew your vows, we will offer it to everybody alike. And let's see. Oh, and then in the next month or so, I'm going to be talking with Craig at the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. We're going to be hosting a ribbon cutting down on the beach to be able to bring in the community and hopefully some of you in the room to see what one of our actual beach ceremony setups looks like, and bring out our vendors and people that we work with in the area to pull off these amazing, beautiful, affordable weddings. Our most expensive package will be $3,500. And so this is just going to be the ceremony. So people with 50 or less guests want to come to the area, get married, have a good time, go out to dinner. You guys, you know, we have many places that they'll be able to be accommodated for these small groups. So toesinthesandweddings.com is our website. And please take a visit and see what we have to offer. And, yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity tonight.
Thank you for coming, Elena.
Thanks
for introducing your business. I don't want to take the spotlight off you, but I have to introduce your dad. Her father is John Ramos, who's here in the audience. John is one of the preeminent artists in the county for many, many years. You want to stand up, John? Right. There you go. We're glad to have John with us tonight. Thank you, Elena.
Thank you.
Red.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Robert Davis. I live in Morro Bay. Plan, which means it needs to go through the Planning Commission, needs to be adopted by the Council, and it needs to be certified by Council of Governments. The Citizens Bike Committee meets next on February 1st, 2 weeks from now. If we can be of any assistance in helping to move the plan along, we would be happy to do that. Another major need that we see is in the area around San Jacinto and Del Mar School. We think that that whole area needs study for safe routes to school. San Jacinto, we believe, needs to have Class 2 bike lanes from Main Street to Ironwood, and several of the connecting streets to the school need to be looked at for safe routes. We would like to see a Class 1 multi-use trail through the Dynegy power plant to connect the Embarcadero through the power plant up to Main Street. That was the number one citizen input project last year when the community met to kick off the bike plan. Between Main Street and the Cloisters on the Class 1 bike trail right now, there are 6 metal bollards that are in the center of the bike trail. Those are designed to keep motor vehicles from using the bike path. We would like to see those replaced with something that's a little more flexible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Red. Thanks for all you do for the bicyclists. Red's been doing it forever.
Forever, yeah.
Thank you. Who would like to go next? Craig Schmidt. Bye, Elena and John. Thank you.
I'm Craig Schmidt, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. I will not be the groom at the ribbon cutting for Toes in the Sand when we do it on the beach. So just wanted to make that clear before you left. See you in a bit. I want to tell you about a toolkit that Chamber of Commerce has put together for businesses. And one of the most popular pages is the business resource page. And in it, we talk about the city of Morro Bay being business friendly, about the green building incentive program, the 3-year moratorium for the payment of development impact fees for commercial projects, and would encourage you to seriously consider the reactivating of the downtown facade improvement program. It's crucial for businesses to get an edge any way that they can. On another matter, I'd like to, but I don't know if I am. Here we go. Last Thursday was the Chamber's installation banquet, and we honored 3 very special people at that banquet, and rightly so. The 2011 Living Treasure Award was awarded to Mike Dominguez of Mike's Barbershop, and it was a very, very teary and emotional reception of this great honor, and Mike and his family are a big asset to the community and want to thank them for all that they've done. The Business of the Year Award was awarded to Pacific Dance Center, and Karen Garman did a great acceptance speech, as did Janice Peters, who was our Citizen of the Year. So all 3 people exemplify what it means to live in such a community as Morro Bay. So I'd like to honor them again for those all the work that they've done. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Who'd like to come? Jamie?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Jamie Irons. I'd like to speak on one of the items. I won't be able to stay for the full hearing, so I'd like to speak on D5 as well. I'm excited to see that we're talking about item A4 on the grant for the Strategic Growth Council. This is an item that it was brought forth on our general plan, local coastal plan subcommittee, and it's something that I discussed with the committee, and I'm very, very pleased that this is coming forward, and the importance of moving forward with our general plan. If you compare that to where we are with our wastewater treatment plan today, I consider that if we'd had an approved general plan and local coastal plan in 2004, we wouldn't have the issues of our wastewater treatment plant today. So to me, that's the level of importance on that, and I would hope we'd approve this and move this forward. Thank you. On item D5, as far as the impact fees, the questions I have for you tonight are on the fees in the...
Roger.
Good evening. Excuse me. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Roger Ewing, Morro Bay resident. 2 items I'd like to address, please. Item D2, the proposed roundabout for the intersection of Highway 41 and Main Street. I stand in opposition. I thought we had put this concept to bed a long time ago for the simple reason that particular intersection, not only is it a very convoluted one, but it's also a very small one. And I think the area is too small to safely put a roundabout in. plus you're dealing with Caltrans, who's rather incalcitrant in many things. So anyway, I offer my opposition. I do not think that's a wise decision. I think time and money can be spent better elsewhere. For instance, San Jacinto and Maine is a nice intersection to start thinking about. The second item, of course, is D5. As you all know, something's very dear to my heart is fairness and a sense of community. And to waive impact fees for residential development, I think, works against both of those concepts. Asking those who came before to have paid impact fees and then told that these people who come after don't have to pay, of course, is not fair. Plus, impact fees finance our infrastructure, our police department, our fire department. And why is it that some who come in late don't have to pay, which means the rest of us have to pay more? And that's not fair. It doesn't help, I think, our economy that much. Impact fees are not that much. You've already reduced them by 50%. So to reduce them to nil and zero makes no sense economically. And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Mayor, and three of you up there who recently ran for city council, you all promised to represent the entire community. And by eliminating impact fees for a few goes against that concept. So I challenge you, honor the promise you made when you campaigned. Think of all of the citizens when you deliberate this concept of eliminating the impact fees, please. I urge you to do the right thing and not eliminate the impact fees. We need the money. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Thank you, Roger. Who would like to go next? Hi, John.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. First, I have to share with you that I have seen the picture of Cello, and it's a terrific animal, and everybody's going to be really happy when they learn more about him and meet him, I'm sure. Secondly, item A, what's the number on here? A3, our water report. Once again, our annual water report, typically every year. The things that I would like to highlight in the report are that, first, it shows that we have a variety of sources for water. We're using water from the Chorro Basin, the Morro Basin, the RO plant, state water, and, we're doing just fine. I know there are some folks that always like to knock that we've got some kind of impending water doom going, but the fact of the matter is that we have a variety of sources to work from. We've got a staff that's capable of making the decisions to protect those sources, and that we will have water now and in the future from a variety of sources. The other part of it that's really interesting to me is that both on the part of the city and on the part of the residents of the city, we have reached what is a very low rate of consumption. We're down to 102 gallons per capita per day. I think that compares favorably with literally any other city in the state. I think we probably have the greatest amount of conservation going in Morro Bay of anybody in terms of the local use of water by residents. It's a terrific figure that we should all be proud of. Lastly, our water loss from the city has gone way down. It used to be up in the 15% range, and now it's down in the 5% range. I know staff will work to get it even lower, but this is a really, really good figure. It's far below a state average, which runs between around 15% typically. So that's all for the better. As far as comments go regarding the so-called impact fee issue, I guess the theory is if you charge them, they will come. The idea being that if we raise our fees, our reasonable fees, I mean, I have to say it's laughable. Anybody that has actually looked at what it costs in terms of impact fees, plan fees, permit fees, and everything else, it's outrageously expensive what it costs to do, and you're doing...
What you're doing is starving the city of money when you're supposed to be helping the city get money. Other cities charge even more for impact fees. So I really wish that you would look at the comparison to other communities, see that we're not out of line, that we need to support our staff by having money to pay for their salaries and their wages and for the equipment that they use. And to eliminate this, as you did with the businesses and for 5 years, is really just beyond common sense, to put it nicely. Regarding the roundabout, the only comment I would add to what Mr. Ewing said was, you'll also remember if you were around when we dealt with this about 10 years ago, was that the high school and its administration were totally against any kind of roundabout at 41 and Main. And I hope you will consult the school district and keep them in mind as you discuss that issue. What I'd like to talk about, there's many things on the agenda that you have on new business and consent and probably should be in other areas, but I want to talk about decision making itself. I keep coming back to philosophy because I'm not sure that there's some consistency that we can depend on as residents from our representatives who are talking and voting for us. I feel, Mr. Mayor, that we're very consistent with knowing where you are. You support the Embarcadero above everything else, and that's where your emphasis is, and all your decisions are based like that. So we depend on you voting that way. We know that about you. About Mr. Smuckler, we know that he's got the people first and that he tries to do whatever he can to support what's best for the public good. Where I'm coming up with a little bit of contradiction, I think, and that is the consistency from Ms. Borchard is that there isn't a consistency. And I want to give an example of that. At the IWMA last week, she chose to vote against the plastic bag ban. She said that that should go to a vote of the people, that it was a concern, if it was such a great concern, that the people really should decide that, not the board. So she was going to give up her power to give it back to the people, and I understand that. Yet at the JPA, when I listened to that meeting, she was not willing to go with what the people said. It was her decision, your decision, and where do you get your information and where do you follow that advice? From staff, she said. We're just doing what staff says. So are you listening to the people? Are you listening to staff? And on one tape, you know, she says one thing, and on another tape, she says another. And so, or are you using staff as kind of a fall guy where you are using them as the excuse to do what you believe is true? Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Who would like to go next? Come on up.
My sidekick.
Sorry about that.
Kim and Nikita Van Nordstrand. I am here to back Nancy with her facade improvement program. I think it could also use an additional city incentive program because I think the people here have money to fix up their buildings. I think they just don't care to. I'd like to know how many absentee owners we have of the buildings. How many people? I'd like to know who owns the building and where they're at in age and concern. You want to hold that up? There you go. Today I had a 2-hour conversation with the City of Dana Point Tourism Director. She invites you all to give her a call. She is a fountain of information. Dana Point is a harbor town down south in Orange County, and they are asking the same questions that you are between the TBID and other associations. They're going through the exact same thing, that branding and the website. So she was a fountain of information, and I have her number and name, and she'd love to hear from you for more information so you guys can learn from their mistakes. Thank you.
Thanks, Nikki. Thanks for coming. Who would like to go next? Anybody else? Going once? Going twice? Back to council. Thank you, Elena, for being here, and Red, both gone, Craig, Jamie. And Jamie, I want to thank you for your service on the Planning Commission, and we will thank you in a more formal way in the near future. We're very grateful for your service to the city and on that board. Roger, always a pleasure to see you. John, Betty, and Nikita, we're very grateful.
And Kim.
Any comments over here? Carl, I applaud your vote on the plastic bags. Thank you very much. That's the roundabout is strictly a discussion. Let's see what happens. You know, we and asked for X amount of dollars, and the city council cut that figure in half. So the way the staff report, no offense intended here, Kathleen, it does make it sound like we cut the fees by 50%. And what we did was what that council did was cut the proposed fees in half. Okay, anything else from anybody? Consent. Anybody want to pull anything? Start down here.
Yes.
A1. Okay, could I have a motion, please, approving items A2 through A4?
So moved.
I'll second it. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. A1, Nancy.
Okay, on page 7 of the minutes where I made a motion regarding the signage and the future sign ordinance, Mr. Barta spoke to this just a moment ago. In the very last line, public services to the Planning Commission and public services for revisions, I should have said, I hope I said rewrite rather than revisions, based on all the information that's above there.
Everybody okay with that? Want to make a motion then? Approve item A1 as amended?
I move we approve item A1 as amended.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Okay, we'll jump ahead. I don't want to do the mid-year budget because I've talked to Homer and I know some of those guys want to come and stand behind her. So if that's okay with you guys, we'll go to the roundabout. And Roger left. D2. Everybody okay with that? Okay, D2, Andrea.
Good evening. I'm going to turn this over to Rob Leivick, our Public Services Director.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, City Council. This item is come before you today based on council direction. Back in 2003, we were near the completion of a draft design report in the environmental process for a roundabout at Highway 41 in Maine. Due to some funding concerns and other mitigating reasons, that application was pulled from consideration. At that point in time, the state was in a similar budget crisis that we're facing today, and they didn't think they could fund construction for that roundabout. So we pulled that project and shifted the funding to the roundabout at Quintana and Morro Bay Boulevard. The intersection still has similar, if not greater, problems with traffic backup there. We have applied and have received recommendation from the SLOCOG board for $113,000 in regional surface transportation funds. That still needs to be ratified by the California Transportation Commission, but that money would move that project along to take another look at the alternatives and finalize the environmental document for that intersection and be ready for when there's a next small increment of funding to perhaps finalize design and go move on to construction. So we want to be ready for when, my friend Ron DeCarli says, that money falls from the sky and we're ready to catch it. So we want to make sure that we're in a position to be right there in line along with everybody else. So the one of the options, the final two options, was a signalization. The other option was a roundabout at that signal. What was brought forward to the final design report was a roundabout, a very controversial item. But I think with our success with a roundabout at Morro Bay Boulevard and Quintana Road, it deserves another look and consideration in this next round of review. That concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. That you know.
Yeah, thank you. I hear what you're saying about the Morro Bay Boulevard roundabout, and personally, I'm not opposed to roundabouts, but I think there's one key difference with the 41 intersection, and that's obviously the high school
roundabouts, how to get people across roundabouts safely.
Could you go into that a little bit more? Because I just, on the surface, it doesn't make much sense that you have pretty much unimpeded motion going into the roundabout. It seems like there's a lot more activity, many more things for the driver and the pedestrian to try to keep track of, and I guess I have a hard time understanding how that would be a safer situation for them.
Since the pedestrian crossing is pulled back farther from the intersection, the driver has a better view of the pedestrian crossing. There's a safe refuge typically designed into the roundabout halfway across the pedestrian crossing. I looked at the accident statistics for the Morro Bay Boulevard roundabout. There have been no pedestrian accidents that I could find for that intersection. I've observed that intersection. I use that intersection at least two times a week on a lunchtime run, and you have clear vision in all directions and are able to see that oncoming and approaching traffic, and use that roundabout. As far as another thing that was brought up with the high school there was the inexperienced driver and them negotiating the roundabout. Well, I think a roundabout is easier to negotiate than a signalized intersection. There's only one thing that you have to do is you look left and you go right. If it's clear to the left, you go. I think they're simpler to navigate than a conventional intersection. What we have right now is definitely not working, and we do need to reanalyze what improvements should be made at that intersection, be it a roundabout or the signalization. We'll have to weigh a bunch of different factors, not least of all, which would be cost of doing improvements to the intersection.
So if I could get a little bit deeper without pinning you down too much on the details, but the idea of pulling the pedestrian walkways further back off of the main interchange there, the center, would that look like actually extending the pedestrian crosswalks further north on Main Street and then further up Highway 41? Is that kind of generally in the ballpark of what you think would be in
the... Well, it depends where the center of the roundabout actually occurs, where that. But yes, it would be pulling the pedestrian crossings further away from the center of the roundabout.
Okay, and then as far as space constraints, that's a fairly tight space. It was brought up in public comment that there is potentially a high cost there to get the amount of space required for a safe roundabout, particularly considering the heavier truck traffic and trailers and so on. Do you anticipate that is possible from review of the prior documents and looking at what Caltrans has commented so far?
Yeah, the previous design was able to accommodate the legal vehicles that would be using that route without any difficulty in the existing right-of-way, without having to acquire a significant amount of right-of-way. It may be typical as of what happened with the Morro Bay Boulevard Quintana roundabout. For lack of a better term, the corners. As you round those corners, you may need to acquire additional right-of-way at those corner points. So that would be Not having the final design, I don't know what, you know, how much right-of-way would need to be acquired, but that would be something that would have to be weighed in the evaluation of what choice that we make for those intersection improvements.
Okay, and then my other question is regarding the school district, and I've had concerns in the past when we've launched ourselves into a project that had really obvious stakeholders that would need to be interacted with for approval at some point, or at least comment at some point. And I'd like to know what your thoughts would be about how to get the school district engaged as soon as possible to make sure that we're proceeding with their approval and input.
Well, just so we're clear, the school district is not an approving authority over the city decision-making process. It's your council that would be the approving authority. But given that, of course, we will engage the school district in we're a ways away from actually pursuing a real project there. We don't even know for sure if we have funding for the additional alternative analysis and environmental document that still has to be ratified by the state. We believe that it will be
till we get and we invest further funds in this to address the school district, and that would be my primary option with when we would start that.
Yeah. Well, the funds are not the city's yet. They still need to be ratified by the state, and one of the criteria that they used in ranking funds for this project, it is on a state-to-state route, there is a wider benefit to the state by studying this intersection. It is the intersection of Highway 1 and Highway 41, so it probably ranks higher than a local city street might rank as far as the state is viewing with this regional transportation money.
So back to my question then, how could we make sure that the school district's brought in earlier rather than at the end of this study? I mean, it would seem
based on council's direction, or you know, we will be engaging them in the design review process.
Okay, those are my questions for now.
Well, this brings up something I've been quietly campaigning for, or silently. Anyway, a school's just a problem there, you know. Someday I'd like to see that school be removed from that area and put somewhere else, because it seems like everything we do down in that area, we run into it. And that's why I've always been kind of looking at that Standard Oil property, and I thought, wow, that would really make a great school site. And that the property out there could be used for a lot of things. A lot of development could go out there. And roundabouts could become an extension of 41 could be done. There's a lot of things could be done. But that school, I've had a lot of experience out there with my children and my grandchildren, and it's a mess to get in and out of there. And I mentioned at one time that it's just thank God we haven't had a serious accident out there or a kid getting hurt, because they're darting out and they're in front of you, and they just don't pay too much attention. And to do anything else, like to get out there with a roundabout, God, you'd have to really sell me on that one, because it's going to be just cause a little more congestion out there, it seems like to me. But I think we should really start taking a look at this. I'm serious about this project. See if we can't get a developer or something to help us along and maybe get that school moved.
It's interesting that you bring in the high school. It's because of the high school that we have the problem. It's because of that, the high school traffic. We need to do something. We need to address it. Now that we've put this roundabout in, I think they work fabulous. And I certainly think it's something to look at. And I think those who are so opposed, we had two of them here tonight, you know, I ask you to keep an open mind. I remember the hearings, what we went through before. I was mayor then, and it got intense. As far as reaching out to the school, I'll personally do it. I'll bring up the principal in the next week and feel them out. Nothing's going to happen without community input, and that includes the school. So, I mean, it just wouldn't. I mean, that's a huge project. So just like this roundabout, the community would definitely be involved. It's, do we want to address the problem? I'm with George. I think the school should be out there. I think it'd be great, but I think, George, respectfully, that, you know, we don't have the power to move the school out of town. That would be San Luis Coastal and Chevron, and it's a great idea, but I don't know that we're the ones that can make that happen. Nancy?
Oh, I think George had... Other than that, I too can remember the other roundabout. I was on planning commission in those days, and it got more than just a little heated. But you know what? It certainly worked a lot better than a lot of people said it would. I haven't seen any of the horrible crashes or trucks running over people. So I think it's something we certainly need to look at. It's a possibility. We have to do something with that corner. And just personally, I'm not sure putting a signal there is the solution, because you're wasting a lot of gasoline waiting for the lights to change. Just one other little comment. I've been there when the kids have headed off to lunch, and let me tell you, I don't think any of them pay attention to where the crosswalks are now or where the cars are stopping. So I don't see how that part could get any worse. They just kind of wander wherever they want to go. They're teenagers. But I think we definitely need to start a discussion and look into this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm north, and you're coming off of the highway from Cambria and trying to exit under the bridge and exit off. And they put in a signalization there that works phenomenally. I can't even talk. Through that area. And so for me, with the students in that area, and I drive through there every day, 7 days a week. I have kids that have gone to that school that are still there that drive and walk through there. It's horrible. It's dangerous. And for me, as much as I enjoy this roundabout, I see a totally different dynamics of a roundabout there. And I would lean, my support would be leaning more towards some sort of signalization program than a roundabout.
So I think the question before us now is, do we want to pursue the roundabout concept at that intersection? Let me just...
Well, if I could clarify, I think the question before us is to pursue further study and update of what we've looked at there in the past, because as Mr. Livick described, we would get a chance to look at resolving the problem there, whether it's a roundabout, whether it's signals. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Livick, but this additional study would give us that chance to look at what would be the best choice there. And it wouldn't necessarily say we want a roundabout and this is the study that's going to give us that result. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I think we would build on the past work that had been done, the two final design recommendations out of the project study report were signalization and roundabout. The winning, for lack of a better term, a project that seemed to work better based on geometrics and traffic was the roundabout. That was the project that went forward, but we would probably take a half step back and relook at both alternatives, because we need to compare current cost to both signalization, roundabout, see if there is the cost in right of way for either one of those. I think, you know, taking that half step back, we do probably need to look at both those alternatives. And perhaps there's a, I don't know if there's any other thing that we can do out there, probably not, that Caltrans would agree with doing. But yeah, I think the final two were a form of signalization and the roundabout, although the roundabout technically was the superior alternative the last time.
So given that, I think that is interesting to me, because I think we all agree that there is an issue there at that intersection that we need to be prepared to resolve. I still like to ask Mr. Livick, these funds you said are very specific, so it's not necessarily a choice of we use these funds for this intersection or another place in town. If you could give me a little more information. I need to be able to determine, are we making the highest choice with these funds, or is there an alternative choice that we could utilize these funds for that might be of a higher priority? If you could explain that for me.
Currently in regional transportation program, the funding recommendation has $113,000 going to Morro Bay for the PA and ED portion of that intersection analysis. That was ranked all the cities and the county put in projects for that. We fell with that project right at the cutoff for funding for that that project. One of the primary drivers for scoring highly on that project was because it is a state-to-state route, Highway 1 and 41. We could apply to have that money changed to another intersection, but there's no guarantees that the SLOCOG board would recommend to use that money for that, or perhaps another project would rank higher than ours and move forward. The next project on the list, as far as ranking, that did not get funding, was a project in the city of Atascadero, the Atascadero Creek bike path and bridge project, to do to get them some money for construction for that project. They ranked right below us by a we scored an 88, they scored an 86. So I'm not sure there's much give in moving that funding around.
That's a good point. When you look at these, you see that the cutoff really shows that bridge, pedestrian, bike bridges were some
that we're working with, so that it's fresh in their mind too.
And we have, you know, a high school parent here, and we have a mayor who interacts with the principal and the superintendent, and you know, we'll start talking and see how they feel. Yeah, cool.
And I would say that at the last hearings, they were not supportive of the roundabout. They had a lot of concerns. So, you know, I agree with engaging them early on.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's against that concept. That was a different principle, a different time, and before the other roundabout was built. But they could still feel the same. We'll see. Yeah.
And I would like staff to be involved with that on the preliminary level, because I think it's important that they hear and have direct access to each other, to the two administrations. It's different for us to have conversations with them and our staff because of the amount of labor and work that's going into this and the understanding that's necessary to make sure that this fits for the community.
You know, I'm interested to see, because I mean, I'm hearing non-support for the roundabout, that even though it would be a different council when this decision came along, you know, if this council is not interested in the roundabout, then why should we be spending this money? We should be focusing on the signalization or another scheme. That would be my thing. You've just said you're okay with looking at it. I'm a proponent of it. The other three here, I don't know what I'm feeling. Look at it. Okay, so I guess we've got a majority consensus to proceed with what they're doing, and that would include looking at the roundabout.
Are we going to spend this money just to look at this roundabout, or are we looking at alternate?
No, look at whatever's best. It would be a study. It would look at the signalization and the roundabout. I think we've put every other scheme through a meat grinder already, and I doubt that there's a third alternative. But who knows what they might come up with. That's not our money, George. That's state transportation money. You want to add to that, Rob? Okay. Anything else?
No motion.
You want to add over here, anything over here? Do we need a motion?
It would be nice to have a motion.
Wait, we've got three bobbleheads here. Okay, well then, it seems to me that you're already in motion on this. Pardon the double. If we hadn't even brought this forward, is this what you'd be doing anyway?
Yes, we'd be kind of in a holding pattern, waiting to make sure that we had the funding. Then we'd be coming back to you when we engage some consultant services to reactivate the project.
I don't see what you're looking for a motion for here, because it's already happening. So are you good with the way it stands?
I understand that we would look at a range of alternatives for intersection improvement and bring forward the one that's the best.
So moved.
Any discussion on the motion that you you phrased it so brilliantly?
Didn't I?
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. You got your way. Okay, let's take a break and we'll be back in 10. Okay, thank you for your patience. B1, Janine.
Thank you and good evening. Tonight you have before you Resolution 5-12 to authorize the submission of Rural Transit Fund grant applications for two projects, the triennial performance audit for the Transit Fund and the purchase of a small van, 7 to 8 passenger van, for the community bus program that Council Members Borchard and Smuckler have been working with the Senior Citizen Group and Meals on Wheels and trying to develop a volunteer community bus program for seniors in the community. The Council of Governments recently did a call for projects, and with applications being due on February 3rd. There is about $520,000 available for competitive applications. Distribution for the fiscal year 12-13 cycle, and the city is one of just a few agencies that are eligible for these funds. The city intends to submit applications for two projects that I already mentioned. The triennial performance audit project cost would be $15,000. This would be 100% from Rural Transit Fund request, as there is no local match required for this type of request. There currently are no capital needs for a Morro Bay Transit or trolley, as we have recently completed a Proposition 1B and an American Recovery and the Meals on Wheels to develop a volunteer program, hopefully for starting sometime later this year once a vehicle is acquired and once the program is fully developed. The Council of Governments requires a local match for vehicle purchases. The project cost would be $25,000. The request for rural transit funds would be $22,000. And the local match from the city would need to be $3,000, or 12% of the total project cost. Council would need to identify at some point whether these funds would come from the general fund or accumulation fund or some other fund identified, as the current Transportation Development Act funds that the city receives are used 100% by the transit fund. I'm sorry, I didn't mention in the staff report a little bit about the timing. As mentioned, the applications are due February 3rd. The Council of Governments would be awarding projects in April, with the earliest that funds could be used January 1. So the local match would not need to be identified and put in place until the next fiscal year. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to the Council for consideration and adoption of Resolution 5-12.
Thank you, Janine. Carla?
I don't have any questions, just comment. I'd like to thank Ms. Burlingame for bringing us the option or the opportunity to identify funds as we've been trying to work with this program for a community bus program for the senior population in the community. We were challenged with how we would pay for this, and so by her identifying this opportunity, hopefully we will be able to get the grant and continue to move forward. So thank you for that.
Andy? Any other side?
Yeah, I just would like to follow up on Ms. Borchard's comments and thank Ms. Burlingame, and also report that the senior citizens have identified a subcommittee. There's enthusiastic support for this from their organization,
that they and the Meals on Wheels have identified a volunteer dispatcher specifically for this volunteer bus program. And as we go through with this, hopefully receiving support for funding of the bus, but we will then start to initiate a search and training for volunteer drivers. So if anyone is interested in being involved at any level with this program as we go forward, you can contact either Ms. Borchardt or myself or the Senior Citizen Organization to lend your support to this. So look forward to further reports as we go forward.
Thanks. Well, if we're spreading all these kudos to you, I'm going to give kudos to Noah and Carla for making it happen. So, and thank you, Janine. Okay, this is a public hearing. If you'd like to address us on this item, this is the appropriate time. Step right up to the mic. Don't be shy. Anybody? Okay. Thank you. I'll bring it back to council. Anything else, Carla?
I just wanted to also identify the city manager who has been helping, and Ms. Luker has been very active in helping us work with the senior community and senior group. Thank you.
Nothing happens without Andrea. Anything else? Anything else?
Motion to approve. B1.
Second. Moved by Carla, seconded by Noah. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0-D-1. Andrea.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm going to be pitch hitting tonight for Susan Slayton on the presentation of this report. As you may feel, the economy, we believe, is continuing to stabilize, and we're getting used to our new normal here in Morro Bay. Compared to other regions in the county, state, and nation, we've experienced, I think, less loss than most other places. Today, as we're looking at our mid-year budget report, we can see that the general fund's performance is as we anticipated. We have some one-time money that has not shown up, and that explains for our low revenue percentage of 45% at 50% of the year completed. An example of that is the franchise money that arrives in March and April. TOT, air transient occupancy tax, is always a full month behind, so the December report actually, we have figures from July through December. Another big issue with revenues is timing. As we're, you can probably imagine, the state is holding on to their money as long as they possibly can and gaining interest on that money before releasing it to the cities and the counties. And one example of that is the COPS grant that used to come through as a one lump sum, and it now comes, we've released quarterly. Expenditures, as you also know, are subject to timing, although the volatility of those is not as significant as it is with revenues. Some expenditures are made at the beginning of the year and may show an 80% expenditure rate at 50% of the year, and we're not too concerned about this at this point. As of December 31st, the general fund expenditures are at 50%. We have two amendments that we're requesting this evening for you to consider and adopt. One is the police department. They're requesting $10,000 to participate in the county special operations unit, which is a combined narcotics and gang 11. And Barbara Spagnolia is here with that. I'm happy to answer questions on this.
Before we do questions or comments, let's hear from Barbara. It's your thanks. Hi and welcome.
Hi. Hello, Mayor Yates, City Council members. My name is Barbara Spagnola. I'm representing as a member of the Measure Q Citizens Advisory Oversight Committee, and I'm here tonight to give our annual report on the transaction tax Measure Q oversight, the fiscal year review for the year 2010-2011. So in this fiscal year, which ended June 30th, 2011, the district transaction tax fund received approximately $769,000 in revenue from taxes, interest, and investment gains. Expenditures and transfers were approximately $700,000. And the revenue exceeded the annual budget by about $69,000. The ending fund balance as of June 30th was approximately almost $1.1 million. So we have attached the fund balance sheet, the income statement, and carryover report for your information. The numbers that are the most interesting are in the lower right corner of the carryover report, and I will discuss those a little bit further. I'm not going to discuss all the line items and details. You have the attachments, but the committee would like to give our oversight report, if you will. So on December 7th, 2011, we held a public meeting at the Community Center, and we reviewed all the transactions in and out of the Measure Q fund. Below is a narrative that addresses our findings. Police Department. In addition to servicing the internal debt for vehicles, the police department used their allocated funds to purchase communications equipment. The fire department used their transaction tax Q allotment for salary and benefits of one full-time firefighter paramedic and added additional reserve hours and overtime hours to achieve a goal of having four firefighters on each shift. The fire department also spent $35,000 for advanced life support equipment. Our recommendations in the fiscal year 2010-2011, the fire department budgeted $191,000 for staff. They spent approximately $165,000 of that amount, leaving a carryover balance of the Delta $26,000. The committee feels that the city should follow the same policy that is currently in place in the other city funds so as to not allow carryover of unspent personnel costs, which wages, benefits, etc. And therefore, this $26,000 carryover should be transferred to, quote, unallocated and rebudgeted in the next fiscal year. And this is the second year that the amount budgeted was greater than the amount spent. Therefore, the City Council should consider, we are requesting you to consider, putting in place a mechanism so unused personnel costs are automatically transferred to unallocated carryover each year. In other words, it doesn't require a specific accounting transaction. It's policy to automatically do that. That would be the committee's recommendation. That's, again, personnel costs. Okay, streets. The street department spent $54,000 on street improvements primarily in North Morro Bay. This amount was substantially less than the budgeted amount. Attached is a report that was prepared by the Public Services Department that shows in detail the streets that will be improved this spring. And you can see it's up on the overhead chart here. I would like to detail those specific streets that are going to be improved so that everybody's aware of the streets or portion of the streets that will be done with Measure Q funds this annual year. First of all, two streets will be reconstructed, Main Street from the Highway 1 overpass to Quintana and Harbor from Piney to Morro Bay Boulevard. Both those streets, Main Street and the Harbor, will be reconstructed. And then in addition to that, the following streets are going to be resurfaced, and I'll read through those. Quintana from Morro Bay Boulevard to Main, Embarcadero from Beach to the power plant, Morro from Beach to Surf, Balboa and Las Tunas from La Loma to Butte, Marengo from La Loma to Alessandra, Marina from Madera to Piney, Apecho from Kings to Kern, Bernardo Avenue from Morro Bay Boulevard to Lucita, Fresno from Pacific to Lucita, Estero from Pacific to Piney, Olive from Piney to Maine, Ridgeway from Arbutus to Piney, Kern from Maine to Pecho, South from Monterey to Maine, and then the following six streets, small streets, will be also resurfaced. That would be Alta, Gears to complete. The committee recommends that the City Council, during the next budget cycle, discuss in more detail the staff's plans for implementing a construction schedule, along with some ideas of funding sources in addition to Measure Q. We understand the funding was a small portion of the budget and that this is a long-term and significant expense. And then finally, at our annual meeting, we had a general discussion. We would like to compliment the staff for keeping the spirit of the voters' intentions in mind when they proposed their 2010-11 annual budget for the Measure Q funding requests. And this is the second year that we have not recommended that certain expenditures be reversed. So everything was in line with what we, the committee, the oversight committee, felt was the intention of the Measure Q that was passed. Thank you. And then also, as we noted in last year's report, the Measure Q fund is still accumulating money. The committee would like to see the City Council continue to encourage the staffs to spend the money so the residents can see the benefit of the extra tax dollars that they are providing to the city. That's the 1/2 percent Measure Q tax. And then finally, I'll conclude. We would like to pass on our thank you to Susan Slayton. She has been very responsive in giving us the information we need to conduct the audit and annual review, as well as responding in a timely manner to all the committee members' questions. Any questions, comments? I have the majority of my crew here to assist in anything I can't answer. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I think it was great. If there's any questions, we'll call you up. Thank you, Measure Q Committee, all of you for being here tonight.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Can I start? Well, I'm going to start with the Police Department's $10,000, which really is more than that. For years, we have not been a part of the County Drug Task Force. The County Drug Task Force, to me, last year, with their busts on the medical marijuana people, misstepped. How's that for putting it mildly? This is a big deal, whether we go back into this or not. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for our chief, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for our sheriff. But I don't have respect, I have none, for the County Narcotics Task Force because of their behavior last year and the trauma that they brought to some of our fellow county citizens and their children and their parents. So I believe if we want to be a member of this task force, this is a separate item to bring to this council to have a conversation. This is slipped into this report in two sentences. Oh, we're going to do $10,000, but that's prorated, so that means in June then we do another $20,000, and we're basically saying, just by approving this, that from now on we're in the county gang and drug task force. I was one of the supporters in the early 90s when we got behind zero tolerance for gangs. I am not a gang proponent. I'm not a drug proponent. I am a proponent of the vote of the people. The people of this state voted for medical marijuana. And one of the arguments when we were talking about dispensaries here was that people have an opportunity that they can call people that will deliver their medicine to them. That was the 12 people that were arrested last year. 6, 7, 8, 9 of them have now been dismissed, but their lives are in ruin. I could support this after I see their behavior after a year, but I cannot support this tonight. So I'm not going to support it. And I believe that if we want to be a part of this, that the chief needs to bring us back and make his pitch and not just, oh, here's two amendments. We got Parks and Rec and we got $10,000. Then, of course, that's just prorated in $20,000 and that's the end of it. This is, to me, a big deal. I may be overruled here, and that's fine if I am. But I have strong feelings about this. So those are my feelings. I'm fine with the Rec and Park request, and I compliment staff for staying within budget, and I think it's a good, other than my little exception here, it's a good mid-year budget report. Noah.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to start by thanking the Measure Q Committee for your work. I think it's been essential for the community to see that those funds are safeguarded. Like, we're potentially seeing some one-time savings with the animal control, and I think that if we do want to have that discussion, it should come with the full budget review at the end of the year so we can really make that decision in context. I think it would be dangerous to do that now, initiate participation, and then realize later that
we're really crunching some other very important components of the police department's services. So I think I would like to have that conversation if the rest of the council would at the full budget review, and I'm certainly not in favor of doing that at the moment. I think those savings with animal control are nice, and let's just stay pat with that and not move forward with allocating those for any other use.
Well, I agree pretty much with what the mayor says, so there's no use repeating it. So I'm just going to let it go at that.
Other than the $10,000, I had just a couple comments, not really questions, on budget items that I found interesting. On page 1 of 40, Andrea did talk about the TOT was up, and it's really, I think, very exciting that it was up a total of 5.1% over last year at this time. So I just wanted to say congratulations. I think that's really good that that is up so high. Then on the other side of the coin, on page 3, if you go down to the bottom, we have plan checking fees and building inspection fees. If you add the two together, because they kind of go together, and you look at last year, they came to about $88,000. This year, we're down to $68,000 in fees, which to me says there's not much happening out there, and we need to do something about that. The other thing, I really appreciated so much the work that Measure Q people did. This is great. I think we really need to be sure that people know that we have the money for streets and that it's going to be spent on these streets. And Mr. Livick, if people didn't get the whole list tonight or they didn't see the map, can they stop in your office and find out what's going on with their street?
Yes, that'd be great. Also, this agenda report is posted on our website, so they can see the list of streets there. Prior to doing any work, we will, of course, notify all those
right.
residents before we inconvenience them for a few days while we do that resurfacing.
Well, I think of all the subjects that come up wandering around town, streets are certainly one of the biggest. So thank you, and I hope we see this work going on very soon. On the last page of your Measure Q report, am I reading this right here where it says at the very bottom that you have about $2 million left in Measure Q to spend? That's a nice chunk of money, and I just wanted to be sure that's what it says. Does somebody want to come tell me?
Yes.
Thank you. Good work.
You see, it's accumulation of carryovers from previous year plus the annual budget that we project. And even though some of it may be reserved for more long-term, you know, the fire and some of that, regardless, that is what is there.
Thank you again for your hard work. That's all I have to say at this point.
Do you have a comment on the $10,000 drug?
I'm listening.
Carla?
Well, I'm going to be in complete opposition of you on the $10,000 for the police department. For me, that funding was always in our budget until we started cutting the budgets and had to remove it, which we were at one time then one of the only city in this county not participating. And it's a huge problem in our schools here, and it's being addressed now, having a resource officer, which is helping. But my understanding, and I'm going to defer to Chief Olivos for a minute and give him the opportunity to defend the expenses, that this whole organization has been redone since the new sheriff has taken over. And so I don't know. Maybe Chief Olivos, you could just give us some clarification on it.
I would be happy to. Thank you, Mayor, Council. Hopefully I'll be able to alleviate some confusion. This was brought forward at mid-year budget because it's very time-sensitive, and it's a critical time for us as an agency, and it's a critical time for the county. There's actually two task force, and I think that's where the confusion's coming up, and gang issues that we have in our county. We have a wonderful community, and I'm not going to tell you with scare tactics that gangs are running prevalent and we have narcotics going crazy through our community, but I will tell you that they are there, and we are impacted by gangs, and we are impacted by narcotics. You have some wonderful, dedicated men and women who work every day, every night, 365 days a year to keep that in check. However, with the staffing levels we have, we cannot participate in long-term narcotics or gang investigations. When we left the State Narcotics Task Force in 2005, we asked the county sheriff's department, which has a separate narcotics and gang task force, for assistance since 2005. What they're doing now is trying to augment their existing team that's been in existence since they've been there with the finances or bodies from the other cities in the areas that used to be part of the State Narcotics Task Force. So we weren't part of the State Narcotics Task Force. We're asking to become part of the sheriff's current narcotics and gang task force. All the other cities are doing this. He is forming MOUs with each of the cities. For cities under 20,000 in population, he's asking for a $20,000 substance fee to help finance that. For cities over 20,000, he's asking for a body or the equivalent of. If we do not join this county, which is local control, it's not state controlled, this is run by the sheriff's department with liaisons from each agency who's a member, if we don't join, I can tell you it will cripple us as an agency to do long-term narcotics and gang investigations. I'm being honest. I'm not making that up. It will cripple us. We won't be able to ask the county for help with long-term narcotics and gang. If we get a lab in our town, and we have had a lab in our town, the expenses alone related to cleaning that lab up, impacts on our budget, on our city, would far offset the amount that they're asking to become part of. So this is a county, locally run, locally managed task force related to gangs and narcotics, and that's they're forming it now is why it's being brought to mid-year. So I hope that I've been in communications with the city manager and our finance director about this. I'm sorry, there's been articles in the paper about what the sheriff is currently doing, trying to build this new team because of the loss of the State Narcotics Task Force, but they are two fundamentally different things. We're not asking to be on a State Narcotics Task Force. This is something that the sheriff's putting in place. If we don't become part of it, we will not be able to ask the sheriff's department for assistance with gang or narcotics. And even if we don't ask them for assistance, it doesn't mean that they're not going to come in our town and work it. We just won't be part of it, and we may not even know about it, which causes concerns for me also if we're not part of this team. And I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Could I ask a question? Is this team that you're talking about different than the team that the mayor was talking about earlier? I want to be really clear on
yes,
that point.
Department of Justice is a state agency, and they funded and operated and provided the supervision for the State Narcotics Task Force. That was the team that is no longer in existence as of January 1st, 2012. This will be under local control. The sheriff will be the final the sheriff's department. This will be part of the sheriff's department with assistance from the other cities. And there will be somebody in the sheriff's department who provides supervision. So it is a different team.
Chief Olivas, is there an opt-out clause then that we can, so if we were to fund this, this would put us in for 6 months until we got to our budget at which time we would look at moving forward and how it would build in potentially to the budget for the next year and the ability to opt out?
I believe the MOU, we haven't signed anything yet, but if we're looking for something like that, I don't think that's a problem. I guarantee you if we don't pay them, it's an automatic opt-out. We will not be able to utilize them.
Thank you.
And just out of curiosity, our savings in the animal services, is that something that you would anticipate is
going to be ongoing, or is that just an anomaly in our charges and for their services there?
I will answer that to the best of my ability. I sit as the chief with on the contract board for the animal services. We are currently in a 3-year contract with animal services. It only goes up by the CPI, which they use based out of the LA Basin area, which I can tell you for 2012 is projected to 3% right now, which is about $900.
Okay, so I guess I'm wondering why
this, if we don't do this, this would cripple the department. The department has been operating since, as you just said, for the past 7 years without being this, and the department hasn't been crippled. I think that you have a relationship with the sheriff. I mean, we don't pay for coroner services and other sheriff services, that if we got in a jam, I can't imagine Sheriff Parkinson turning his back on us. And then the other thing you said was all the other cities are doing this. Have all the other cities approved this? And that was your statement. I put it in quotes here.
Yes, I said the sheriff is working with all the other cities on an MOU, and from the last chief's meeting, yes, all the other cities are looking forward to moving forward with this new team with the sheriff's department.
That was not your words, but that's fine.
I apologize. Maybe I misspoke.
Okay, I'm voting against this for the reasons that I stated before, but somebody may make a motion.
Actually, I had one other question. And I don't know if we're going to be able to answer it without Ms. Slayton. It's not really that big of an expense, but I'm noticing with the council totals here on page 5 that we're seeing a fairly, it's a noticeable uptick in the costs of our council. And I guess I'm wondering where that's coming from. It's not a lot of money, certainly, but it's to see the prior year versus this year, it's close to, we're getting close to over $4,000 in change for this mid-year and going forward. Wondering if you could speak to that briefly.
And my apologies, I cannot speak to that, but I'm happy to bring that information back to you in the form of an email or a memo and let you know. I don't know the detail on that. Again, I'm sorry.
Somebody want to make a motion?
Well, I would ask then, Noah, just for clarification on the Parks and Rec and how you wanted to address that. Was that at a later time?
Actually, I'm comfortable with the Parks and Rec. That seems to me pretty straightforward.
Okay.
It's in total relation to the number of participants in the programs.
Okay. Move approval of D1.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries 3-2. Back to you, Chief. D3.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. Recently, there's been questions and some concerns raised from citizens.
Excuse me, Chief. Thank you, Measure Q, for coming tonight. Thank you, Barbara. Forgive me for that, Chief. Go ahead.
Not a problem. So there's been some concerns and questions raised from some of the citizens about possibility of violent sex offenders being released on parole and being able to reside in our community. So I was asked with bringing back some information on, specifically on Jessica's Law, about how that protects our community. So a brief update. Currently, we have 16 registered sex offenders who live within our community, and the majority of those have lived here for quite some time. 11 of those are required to be posted on the Megan's website, which is administered by Department of Justice. But all 16 are required to register with our department every year or on a monthly basis. And that is tracked, and they're made to, that's made sure that they follow all the regulations. And we have a detective and our dispatch supervisor who are assigned to do that currently. I've also provided in the packet information specifically on Jessica's Law, which was enacted in November 2006. And Jessica's Law really increased a lot of regulations and requirements for sex offenders. That law was challenged in 2010 related to the specifics of sex offenders being able to live within 2,000 feet of any school or public park where children congregate. The Superior Court ruled at that time that the specifics about residing within 2,000 feet and some of the others is really only when only applicable to recently released sex offenders since the law was enacted in 2006. The argument was that it applies to all sex offenders, but it does not, only those that have been released since 2006 when the law was enacted. So what we did is we took a 2,000-foot radius from all of our parks and our schools to kind of get an idea of the areas protected in Morro Bay, and it was pretty significant. We have several parks where children congregate, and in addition to several schools. So it only left a very small area on the southeast edge of town where it would even be a possibility for recently released sexual offenders to reside within our community. So with these restrictions, any new registered sex offenders would have a difficult...
Releases and things are definitely going to be changing the dynamics of our communities and who's in them. So thank you.
I just want to say thank you for the information that clarified several things.
George? Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I guess I just want to comment that this is another value that we get from our parks because obviously the spread of parks throughout our community helps us keep this limited and under control. And I agree with you that there is a lot of concern in our community about this issue. And thank you for bringing it up, and this is very helpful in communicating to our public what safeguards there are.
Anything else? Thank you, Chief. D4, Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. This item is a discussion on reactivating the downtown facade program within the city. In 1994, the city had initiated a program where City of Morro Bay pledged $100,000 to guarantee loans for the improvements of facades. They worked with Mid-State Bank. Mid-State Bank would qualify the folks for the loans and issue the funds if the $100,000 was only used if the loan was more than 60 days past due. During that early program, only one participant took part in the facade program in couple times in 2003, this item was brought back to City Council. Early in 2003, discussion was to bring back the program but not pledge city funds. And then later in 2003, to take a look at the program and find out how many potential participants there might be. Post publication of the staff report, I had a chance to talk with manager of Rabobank, who is very interested in participating again with the city on this program, he thinks that a reestablishment of the a program could be a win-win situation for both the bank and the city by getting partnering with the city to improve the looks of the downtown. A lot of cities provide or used to provide grants for their facade and business improvement programs. Those grants were funded through redevelopment agencies. It appears that we no longer will have that option to even think about forming a redevelopment agency. So that is out of our reach. I guess in conclusion, I think the next steps would be to work with the Chamber, the Downtown Merchants Association, to see the interest of business owners in pursuing this program, and to also work with the bank to come up with a loan program. That concludes my report, and happy to answer any questions. Oh, just one aside. I could not find anywhere where we rescinded Resolution 19-94, so that resolution still is in effect that supports the facade program.
But my recollection is we withdrew the $100,000. I mean, there's still not $100,000 sitting in the. Of course, Susan's not here to answer this, but
I don't think there was any money ever sitting in. Well, besides our regular money sitting in Rabobank or Midstate Bank, we just signed a pledge that we would guarantee that if somebody defaulted on that loan. But I don't even know if at that time. $100,000 was actually budgeted.
If it wasn't put up at the bank, then it was put aside in the budget. It was identified because I was on the scene, but you know, 15 years ago and you know, long time ago. That was my recollection, is that eventually we withdrew that money. But I could be wrong. Pardon me?
I vaguely recall that also. It was in the budget, and then one of the budget years we just eliminated that line item in the reserve.
Yeah. And I think this is because it's one of the best kept secrets in town. This needs to change. We need to act immediately on this new proposal to either reactivate or reinvent this facade improvement program. Then we need to get a letter written under the mayor's signature to both property owners and business owners to let them know that we've initiated three programs to encourage them to invest in their buildings, their businesses, and our city. The two programs he already passed are the elimination of parking requirements for North Morro Bay merchants who want to expand or change their use, and the moratorium on impact fees that, as I just said, we passed June 14th. And it's my firm opinion that since there hasn't been any information out on this yet, and that's partly my fault because I was waiting for this third piece, I think we need to extend that moratorium for another year as part of our action tonight. The facade program should not only include a city-guaranteed low-interest loan, but we should also waive permit fees. And the program should last 3 years. As Rob said, Greg Kaufman at the bank is very interested in getting this going. And I think one of the most important things about this proposition, this idea, is that new and improved business in our community is what we need to increase our sales tax revenue and to provide our citizens as well as our tourists with the kind of shopping experiences that they need. The last thing that I want to do is have to drive into San Luis every time I want something. And I hate to see tourists just go right through our town without stopping, because it looks old and shabby. We've got some great businesses in this town, and I think we need to encourage them by reactivating or reinventing this facade program. And if that happens and the mayor gets a letter written, I promise I will follow up and call every business owner and property owner to whom the letter goes and make sure they got it and see what they're going to do about it. And that's my little spiel on this. I think we need to move forward.
How much are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking the $100,000. Start with $100,000 and four loans of $25,000. I know originally it was only $15,000, but that was a long time ago. Costs have gone up considerably since then.
I think it was originally $10,000, and that was 17 years ago.
So $10,000 is not going to go far. Right, George?
Okay, questions for Nancy or Rob? Carla? Address your questions to Rob.
I'm going to wait until I hear what the rest of the council has to say. I do appreciate that you've been so receptive, both you and Kathleen Mould, in helping to work on, because of us determining that we would not go forward with the redevelopment agency a few years back. And in hindsight, considering where we're at now, I'm very thankful for that. But what I appreciate is that we've continued to look at redevelopment strategies within the means of our community and the resources we have. And I think that this is another example of ways that you guys have been creative in helping us try and find redevelopment ideas to bring forward. It's just seen now if people want to actually implement them. So I will pass it down.
Let me get clear on this. You're talking about we're going to just put up $100,000. Is that the amount that we would be guaranteeing? Who'd answer?
Would have to apply to the bank for a loan, qualify for their loan. And
what I was going to point out, okay, you said $25,000. Okay, we got four people participating at the max, right? What happens when four people?
I think if it's successful, bring it back and
bring it back and add more. We can always add to it.
Okay, that's.
If we had four, that would be four more than we had last time.
Right.
That'd be four times we had.
Or 100%.
They're probably not going to be a rush to the bank, right?
Well, we hope so.
We hope so. Yes, we do. But it didn't happen the last time.
Well, we didn't do the letter that we're going to do right away.
I think it's a great idea. I really do.
No.
Let's hope that they get out there and participate.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for bringing this forward, Ms. Johnson. I just wanted to start by reading the facade improvement definition for the public's knowledge, which is listed in the staff report. Painting the exterior walls, window, and door trim.
Boxes that cost money, that would be part of your facade. But a bike rack would not be. But we understand that where you're coming from on bike racks, and you want bike racks everywhere, and there are other ways to get bike racks.
Well, I think, though, that if someone, we're talking about furniture. If someone came up with a really good reason why a bike rack in front of their store would help improve business, I wouldn't object to it. But as Mr. Leibich said, I think there are other ways that we're going to get those funded, but I don't want to see this die because of that. But
I agree with you. I just wanted to bring that up as a conversation.
You want your bike rack.
And I understand Mr. Leibich would be able to guide a business that was interested to the most appropriate place to get a bike rack if they are interested. And to respond to the mayor's comments, I think actually I'm in favor of some bike racks in town, which would be a change from what we have now. We have a few bike racks, but we are woefully inadequate in the parking options for bikes throughout town. So when you say, I want them everywhere, I think that's a miss. You're misstating what my intention is on that subject.
I apologize for that.
Thank you for the apology.
You are a pro bike rack man, and I'm with you, and I'm totally with you. We have seen in the past with other projects that you try to squeeze a bike rack in wherever you can, and I respect that. That's not meant to be disrespectful at all.
Right. No,
I just don't see that in the definition of facade. Council wants to
I'm making it clear. The way you said that made it sound like I want a bike rack in the middle of Main Street and Morro Bay Boulevard, right in the middle of that intersection.
Sorry, you took it that way.
But I wanted to clear that up. The other question I had was with historical markers and signage. Do you, in your opinion, would that also be included currently in this, in what we have here, or is that something that would need to be added?
Business signage or
Historical marking and signage. So, say it's a historical building that part of the facade was the business would like to say, this building is...
George Washington slept here.
Or this building's our old post office, established, whatever. Yeah, exactly. Something to highlight a historical significant spot.
I think if it fit in with the facade, I think that would be completely supportable. And if it was an attractive feature of that facade improvement, I don't see why would want to regulate that.
Great. Thank you. My last question, I guess, was I got a little confused when you brought up about folding the extension of our moratorium on commercial impact fees into this. Is that what you're proposing, or would you like to keep that separate so we can be more tidy about this vote, specifically on the facade improvement?
I think it's all part of a program to improve businesses in Morro Bay, and I think since we haven't done anything for the last year because we were waiting, I was waiting for this piece to get taken care of, I would like to see it included. If it, you don't want to include it, that's fine. We can do that another time.
I'd prefer if we kept them separate just for overall tidiness and clarity.
As long as we don't forget about it.
Well, you can declare it.
I will.
Right at the end.
Okay.
I don't think we can, just because I've kind of gotten some eye contact here. It's not part of the agenda.
All right. Well, we won't then.
Can I ask something?
You certainly may.
Can you clarify? This is the downtown area. Is there boundaries on this?
No waterfront.
No water.
Not you.
God, I thought I found another 25,000.
It does include the visitor serving area.
Yeah, it's on the facade improvement program sheet. All the zoning, C1, C2, C-CS, or MCR zones.
Does he have to step down?
Yes.
Yeah, you too.
I don't own mine. It's only for owners.
Oh.
No.
Building.
But you're in a C1 zone.
Yeah, but you're a business owner. But I don't think you
Anything
have to step.
Though?
I don't know. There's the boss.
It's more than just the downtown area.
Yeah.
It's all the
yes.
all the business district.
A commercial core. How is that?
That's good. I like that.
Okay.
Nancy, I'm going to suggest that in your motion. You could include the letter in the motion, though, and just don't mention the other stuff. She'll know that on the facade improvement program sheet, you change this word to up to 25,000.
Oh, okay.
It will have a new definition there.
Okay. I move that we approve the facade improvement program to assist business goes out to business owners and property owners.
Within 30 days?
We can do it faster than that. No, within 30 days. End of motion. Do you still want to?
Are you clear on this, Jamie? And we can repeat it if you want. Okay. You want to resecond? Because she's amended.
I resecond whatever that was.
Any discussion?
Yes.
That? Yes, go ahead.
How about a friendly amendment? Well, it's back to the four loans, $100,000. So if five people went and applied and they only wanted to use $15,000 or $20,000, now we've eliminated it because you said four loans. So wouldn't it be a loan up to $25,000 for a total of a $100,000? Well, I didn't get a chance. I'm just asking for a friendly amendment. If you,
I accept your friendly amendment, whatever it was.
It's just not as restrictive.
We're going to amend the up to four to a total of $100,000. And then, okay, and then you need to do it one more time.
One more time?
Yes.
Second.
One more time. I'll second it.
It's a motion clear. And sorry for the confusion. Any further discussion? Thank you, Carla. Any further discussion?
No.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. D5, Kathleen Wold.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Before you tonight is a proposal, a discussion on a proposed moratorium on the payment of development impact fees for residential development. And in our staff report, we've provided you some background on the establishment of the impact fees, when they were done and how they were done and why they ended up being as they are today. And with that, we included that there were some projects that were exempted from those fees, and including residential additions of less than 500 square feet. With that, after moving away from the background, we just provide you a little discussion about what has been paid into those impact fee accounts to date. And so as the time frame would be from January 1st, 2008, until the end of this year is what we included in here. and we had $420,289.11. So we're just trying to give the council an idea of if they were to adopt a moratorium, what kind of fees would most likely be that you would be not obtaining with this moratorium. So we give you a best guess as we can come up with that for a five-year moratorium, it would result in a loss of about $500,000. So one of the items that was in the study that was adopted indicated that the point of adopting an impact fee was to eliminate the need to have either existing ratepayers or taxpayers fund these impacts to government, police, park, fire, storm drain, transportation, water, and wastewater. And so now if they aren't paying those through the impact fee, more than likely the reverse would occur, which would be that you would be looking for additional funding sources and not through the impact fees. And with that, we just provide that as an overview. And we note that the council should weigh the benefits to the development community against the loss of revenue to determine if the benefits outweigh the costs. And now I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Kathleen. Who did I start with last time?
We'll start with you, George. Well, we did this for the businesses, and we didn't see a big influx of people coming and taking advantage of this so far. And there's an argument that we're taking away money from the city funds, and but I think this is all about stimulating some building around here. So, I'm all for it. I'm not going to discuss this any further. I'm for it.
Yeah, one thing missing from your report, and it's not that it was your duty to do this. I think you did your duty here, pointing out from your perspective what we'd lose. But if we go from the four building permits we got now, remember we used to have like 50, that it would generate way more than $100,000 a year in extra revenue to the city. But even more important, it puts a lot of people to work. And there's people hanging on by a thread here. The counter guy, the door guy, the appliance guy, all these construction-oriented people are barely hanging on. And, Lindsay worked for Morrow Doors. They employed five people. Lindsay got laid off. They're down to two over there. I mean, and I know they're just hanging on. And they're a typical one that if houses aren't being built, they don't sell doors. And as George says, the whole idea behind this is to spur construction.
This is like parks and some of these other things, whereas new residents do use those parks and use the services more than a business would. As I said, the business is bringing in tax revenue. So I'm not sure at this moment right where I stand on this one.
I'll go next.
Okay. I think the way you describe this brings up one of the chief concerns I have, and that's it. We really don't have any good information to make this decision. It sounds fairly arbitrary. We don't have data to show really what the effects of this would be. You speak to economic impacts that would help us, but yet we can't really look at that and balance the loss that we would have from our infrastructure and our key services to the community. I look at this list of what those impact fees go for. It's police, park, fire, storm drain, transportation, water, and wastewater. These are all areas that we're totally dependent on and have direct impacts to our quality of life here. And we're scratching to pay the bills on all of these things. So to say that we will pick a number of 5 years and do away with funds to these very important services and infrastructure projects and systems is, to me, it's really concerning, and I cannot support it. I think about some of the potential upcoming projects in communities or neighborhoods that have extreme needs with their infrastructure, roads and storm drains. and collection systems and so on, such as North Morro Bay and the islands. And we just talked about the tank farm property on Panorama recently in our closed session and the potential of that coming up. And as a development, that's public knowledge. And I wonder what would happen if we had a suspension of impact fees and there was a legitimate proposal, which there could be, for a project there. What does that do to the neighborhood, and how are we going to cover ourselves in that situation? This is a very risky, extreme move, and there is no fair share component to this once we were to remove these impact fees for new projects. So the cost is too high for us to take this move. I was uncomfortable with the commercial, although I was willing to go there. I was hoping we could temper it with our green building incentive program, which we still have, which residential projects can apply for to receive relief. And we're, in that case, we're encouraging them through incentives to develop in a way that has reduced impacts on our infrastructure. And I think that's there. With the mixed use, I wasn't willing to go as far as we did, but in this case, I think this is an extreme move, and I'm not willing to support it.
Can I make a comment before I go to you?
It is a gamble. It is. We're talking about $100,000 a year. If we make more than that, we will have the funds to replace this. That's the whole idea, is that we would make it up. But I can't prove that. You know, I can't. Carla.
I agree in part that it is very challenging for our construction industry in this city. It is very challenging in this state right now. I think part of it is the cost for the impact fees, but it is only one part of it. And yes, if you can offer relief, that certainly helps. But I agree with Mr. Smuckler that at what cost, when you weigh that out, the cost of materials to build a home is just staggering right now. And the fact that we have a very limited inventory of real estate in this community. So I think those all factor into the reduction of building. My concern is I have some friends who are challenged through the process in our city right now and are faced with some expenses they didn't know they had. My concern isn't even in regards to this, but our process, that you would walk in for a permit and not be provided information to know what those costs would be up front before you head down that path. I have a greater concern for that, that somebody would head into a project and not have had a full opportunity to understand what these costs would be, regardless of what they are. I think we need to do a much better job to reduce to eliminate the fees. I probably would have been open to looking at maybe some potential reductions, but to eliminate the fees, to me, is just we're at a really challenged time in regards to building.
We're not building $100,000 houses very often.
No, so we'd multiply that by four or five times.
I understand that total project cost, if you're looking at building a house, the impact fees are somewhere around 5% of the total construction development costs.
Well, that's an interesting
city
number,
5%. Fees in general, city fees, recording fees and such, bring that total to about roughly 10%. So 10 for everything. Roughly for single family home construction, 10% of the cost is in fees, plan check and such.
Okay, one other question. Would this include some of our newly approved projects like Bonita and Main or others? So they would not pay impact fees?
I think it depended on how you worded the moratorium, whether you included projects that are in the pipeline or from this date forward.
Interesting.
So you're the swing here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to say no.
No, we don't need to take any action.
You know, Right now, zero building or zero impact fees, right? And how much more a building could go on to that we would get our regular fees? Would it catch up to what we're paying for impact fees, if you know what I mean?
The plan check, for example, the plan check building inspection fees are paying for the cost of our plan check and building inspectors to actually do the work. These fees don't pay for operating expenses at all. These go into accumulation funds for funding future capital projects is the point of these fees. So they're not operating expenditures. They're only for capital needs. So they're really apples and oranges. Our building permit fees and impact fees are two different categories.
Well, if we don't get building going around this town, like there won't be a place to buy your doors. Or I know my nephew is having a lot of problem with his glass company. We got to stimulate some business there. I'm building here, and I just still believe that this will help. And so I'm definitely for it. So.
You're the same?
I'm staying the same. I just wanted to comment that we do have some projects in town currently. There's some new residential construction happening, very nice-looking homes. And I would, again, just remind us that we have a green building incentive program that could be strengthened, that helps and encourages. It's a carrot to give potential builders, homeowners, the opportunity to reduce those fees in a way that also recognizes that we have impacts to our infrastructure and encourages them to build in a way that doesn't have those impacts. So I'm comfortable with that. I would be willing to talk about ways to strengthen it or encourage more utilization of those, but the Green Buildings Incentive Program, but not in this form.
And you're standing pat?
I am. Whoops. I am, and I have a question. Just in general terms, how many home building projects do we currently have in the pipeline? Just in general. Doesn't have to be exact, just a guesstimate.
Well, I know that we do have them coming in and out. I don't know exactly, but I know we had one that the person wanted to pull permits yesterday and was willing to pay the impact fees, and you know, we asked him to, you know, I mean, we have people coming in pulling permits right now for single family homes. It's not that we don't have any activity at all. And then we have remodels. We continue to have demo reconstructs throughout the community. And that's a unique situation because when you tear down a home, you only pay the impact fees on the difference. And so you get your credit for your square footage. So there continues to be these sort of exempt projects. So, you know, there are people that can actually demo and reconstruct without incurring these impact fees. So there is an incentive for some. And then there's the 500 square foot exemption also. So there are people that maybe who are more restricted in their budgets may keep their remodels down to 500 square feet. And that might be an area where, you know, maybe that could be bumped up to maybe a remodels of maybe 1,000 square feet, you know, if there was movement in some of the fees. But we also at the same time have some very large homes coming in. We've seen some 4,000 and even a 10,000 square foot home coming into the community, and they'll be.
But I'm seeing a lot of reconstruction in the community, and as I understand from Ms. Wald just now, most of that because they're leaving and maybe just doing a rebuild or some minor, you know, they're getting credit for all those impact fees they've already paid, so it's minimal. It's not the whole 90,000 or whatever to build that new home. So I think those are at least recognized.
Anything else? This item is concluded. We are at declaration of future agenda items. Go ahead.
I have one. I'd like to have the city manager look into an idea that is coming about in several municipalities of paperless agendas. And it's a computerized program, which has the potential of saving hundreds of staff hours and tens of thousands of dollars a year by making some changes in print versus computer POS, or not POS, it's not point of sale. It should be. Anyway, so I'd like to look more into it.
Are you clear on that?
She is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not. Conversation. As long as she is, that's what matters.
Next. Paperless agendas.
I'll support that.
Did you have?
Oh, I have one.
Oh, we forgot about the support.
Yeah, don't you want to support?
Well, everybody supports Carla.
Okay. I'm almost afraid to even mention this. To extend the moratorium on commercial properties of the... see, I'm completely confused now. On impact fees for one more year.
I'll support that.
Thank you.
I'll support that.
Everybody supports it.
Oh, how sweet. Well, he doesn't, but that's all right.
Look at him.
Sure. Mixed use commercial, yes, please. Mixed use. It's just commercial. Mixed
talking
use.
About the existing program we have.
Yeah, extend the existing program we have. It may have.
Yes, it does.
But I have other support, so we can talk about it,
yep.
Noah.
You don't need Noah.
George?
I got one, but I think I'm going to make a little more study on it first.
Okay, Noah? Okay. Anything else from council? Anything from staff? Thank you very much. We are adjourned.